Hello and welcome back to the Damage Report with me, John Iadarola. And we are very lucky to be joined once again on the program by contributor to Rebel HQ, Kyla Frank. Welcome back to the show.
Great to be back. Thank you for having me, John.
Great to have you here. I think we have an awesome rundown that I think you're really going to enjoy. But you've also been producing some content for our audience to enjoy in your new position with Rebel HQ. What are some of the things you've been covering over there?
Yeah, most definitely. And I've been covering, you know, the latest right-wing nut jobs, Trump losing it over Letitia James' incoming lawsuit. And talking about youth activism and movements. So everyone go over and check out my playlist over at Rebel HQ. I've talked about a lot of interesting and great things.
That's awesome. You know, I haven't checked in on that lawsuit against Trump recently. Do you have any hope? How's that going?
Well, I have as much hope as, like, you know, the system currently runs. Again, they tend to protect powerful people and not hold them accountable. So I'm crossing my fingers. I know that Letitia James has a pretty good case. But whether Trump gets jail time, we'll see.
That is true. We will have to see. And through the course of the show, we're going to see about a lot of different things, including Piers Morgan maybe making Trump look kind of sympathetic. Thanks a lot for that, Piers. We'll jump into that. Bernie 2024, we'll have a little bit of a debate. And then Florida going after Disney, and we've got a bunch of right-wing goons as well. Maybe even Rudy Giuliani will make an appearance if we're lucky. So everyone is going to need to buckle up for that as we launch into this show. And along the way, if you are on a platform that allows for liking, sharing, those sorts of things, that would be great so that people know we're live. And you can send us comments, tweets, super chats, all that. And we'll respond as we go. But with all that said, Kyla, you ready to talk about some news?
Absolutely.
Okay, let's do it. Starting with this.
Okay, Piers, I'm ready.
A former president in denial.
I'll be completely straight with you to your face.
I think I'm a very honest man. Much more honest than you, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
It was a free and fair match. You lost.
Only a fool would think
that. You think I'm a fool?
I do now, yeah.
With respect.
Excuse me.
Okay, but with respect,
the
you haven't produced the hard evidence.
Excuse me.
The most explosive interview of the year.
I don't think you're real.
It's, I realize that I'm not like...
Very dishonest. Let's finish up the interview.
Morgan versus
Turn
Trump.
Turn the camera off.
Oh, it's the Clash of the Titans. And by now you've probably seen that. It went, you know, viral. Like, it was trending on Twitter yesterday. Piers Morgan getting into it with Trump and apparently getting so under his skin that Trump just storms off. But if you're familiar with Trump, but especially if you're familiar with Piers Morgan, I don't know, maybe you felt like I did that. Are we sure this is presenting an accurate idea of what actually happened? In fact, yesterday when I was on the Young Turks with Ann Kasparian, I expressed my concerns about what might really be going on, as you'll see in this.
First of all, this is all PR. Look, I could be proven wrong. Mm-hmm. It's Trump and it's Piers Morgan. These are two people who are known to only think about promoting themselves. Everything they say and do is based around that. Are we 100% sure that they didn't cook this up? Or that at least Piers
no,
didn't cook
we're
it
not,
up.
We're not 100% sure. And you're right. I mean,
but,
politics.
But all of that is designed to get you to watch. I got news for
yes.
you. That is by far the most, the only interesting part of the interview. Whatever Trump says is just going to be the same thing you've heard. So enjoy that trailer. Do not watch the show.
And I would like to stick with that. When it eventually does come out in just a few days, I'm not even going to tell you the day it comes out because I don't want you to watch it. Don't watch it. But also, yeah, it's looking like, no, that was not an accurate depiction of what actually happened. And the evidence of the perhaps artifice being used in crafting that trailer has come out in multiple phases, starting with this statement by Donald Trump, who says, Piers Morgan, like the rest of the fake news media, attempted to unlawfully and deceptively edit his long and tedious interview with me. First of all, it's unlawfully edit. I don't think there's a lot of laws about exactly what sort of jump cuts you can use and everything, but he wanted to make it look like I walked out of the interview when my time limit of 20 minutes went over by an hour. The good news that the interview is taped, to keep him honest. Here's my favorite part. The interview was actually very strong on the 2020 election fraud, with me calling him a fool, if you truly believe those results. I love the idea that the interview was strong because I called him a fool. Well, that was a masterstroke there, and you calling him a name, I guess. But the thing is, while Donald Trump is a bad guy, he is not necessarily wrong here, because there will be more evidence forthcoming. First, though, Piers Morgan responded to the statement by Trump saying, "Morning, Mr. President. It was a great interview. Thanks for all your time. Sorry you got so annoyed that I don't believe the 2020 election was rigged or stolen from you. But as I said, where's your proof? If you have it, show us, or accept the result and move on. And as I will get to, some of the more raw footage taped by the Trump camp has now been described. You can find the audio online, actually. And it turned out that, yeah, Piers Morgan was sort of messing with the results here. Kyla, are you surprised that that like bombastic, like WWE style trailer turned out not to be accurate?
Not at all. And like, honestly, you know, people love, even people on the left, we love to see right on right violence. But again, like you said before, I don't want to see people watching it or even applauding Piers at all for this, because it just further legitimizes his platform. We shouldn't, you know, applaud him for knowing basic information. We know that Trump lost the election. He's just living a little bit more in reality than Trump, and that's nothing to applaud or cheer on.
Yeah, 100%. Like, okay, so he is willing to admit that the election was stolen, which should be, that is not the bar. That is so far below whatever any bar we should have for journalists. But at the same time, so does that make it, we're supposed to forget that he's got this bizarre obsession with Meghan Markle and he makes like every news cycle about how Meghan Markle's awful or something? No, he remains an awful self-promoter who, again, you cannot trust Piers Morgan. Like when he decided to quit his job with like Good Morning Britain or whatever it was he was doing, he presented it very transparently as him being canceled and all that. No, he just quit. Like you can't trust this guy. And fundamentally, an inability to trust someone who's presenting themselves as a journalist, that seems like an issue personally. But let's jump now into what actually happened. So this is according to an analysis of the audio. Morgan claimed, and a preview, the one we showed you, seemed to show that Trump got miffed when his interviewer called him out for falsely claiming that he'd won re-election back in 2020. Trump calls Piers, with whom he'd previously been chummy, dishonest and a fool. Exactly, very strong interview. Trump started talking again after that about a hole in one that he had gotten a few weeks ago. Morgan had claimed that Trump then gave him a hateful look and left, but on the audio, the two men can be heard laughing and thanking each other with no dramatic storming off, or at least like a dramatic storming off that might have been overly played up or even jokey, but that he went back and he did more of the interview. And at the end, Morgan can be heard saying, "That was a great interview." Trump says, "Yeah." Morgan says, "Thank you very much. I really appreciate it." Trump at that point says, "Turn the camera off." And the Trump team are now claiming that the preview was deceptively edited to imply that he stormed off when it didn't actually happen. In fact, the "turn the camera off" is being presented as early on. It happened at the very end of the, it's so dishonest. And I don't know how many people were gonna watch it anyway. This was a desperate attempt to get people to watch it, Kyla, but it's just, you should be able to expect a little bit more honesty even out of someone like Piers Morgan.
And you know how you mentioned how you know, his obsession with Meghan Markle, like he ran off when he was getting questioned about it, and he was telling on the internet like, "Oh, give me more of a, you know, back me up here. You know, I was upset. I came back. I talked it through." And it's kind of funny him seeing and turning it now onto Trump. And so again, he's a clown. They're just doing it for PR, and no one should be watching or legitimizing any of what he has to say.
Exactly. And look, I'm not going to tell you that like Trump looks great coming out of this. I mean, after all, he is still occasionally insisting that he won the election. You know, like once every 2 or 3 months or so, he admits that he lost. We cover it and then he forgets that he said it or whatever. He did kind of freak out a little bit. He is still lying about the results of the election. But you don't do yourself any favors when you allow him to easily present himself. And there to be a plausible case that he's sort of the victim here, that you are lying about the interaction that you had. And in fact, in terms of how Piers Morgan handled the interview and the audio, a handler for Trump can be heard multiple times saying Morgan needs to wrap up the hour-long interview. Now look, handlers do that all the time, and that doesn't necessarily make them right. But if the interview was scheduled for 20 minutes and you're over an hour, then yeah, they get to be a little bit frustrated, especially because you as an interviewer are then putting them in the position where, well, like if you're not gonna let them like consensually end the interview, then the only way it can end is with them kind of looking bad by storming off or saying, "I'm not taking any more questions." That's what you then provided as an interviewer. And I, like, Trump is a bad guy. He is arguably the worst guy. I do not like anyone giving him a news cycle where he gets to come off as the victim. And that is what Piers Morgan has done in his quest to get people to watch him, to tune into his dumb new show. He gets to make Trump look like the good guy here. Any other thoughts?
It's just absolutely ridiculous, but I might be I think it's kind of funny. I don't really like Trump. So any situation that makes him uncomfortable, I'm down for it. Let's just be honest. Like, he doesn't deserve to be comfortable in any setting that he, you know, steps foot in. But again, he used it for a PR stunt. He used it to get clicks and views. And so I agree, like, he shouldn't be using these deceptive tactics in order to, again, make money off of it. And so in that respect, I don't agree with what he did. But do I feel bad that Trump was made uncomfortable? Not in the slightest.
100%. And really fast, just as a throwaway, there was an audience member who raised the Half Black Reaper raised this. Trump is about to do a rally in Nebraska with Herbster, the candidate that Charles Herbster that we talked about last week, who is facing allegations from multiple Republican women that he groped them at parties and things like that. These are multiple Republican politicians, women that say he groped them. Trump is about to do a rally to get that guy elected. But instead of the news cycle being about that, Piers Morgan trial, like, I know it's really frustrating. This is a terrible guy. Focus on that, not on trying to get yourself promoted. As I always say, the news is not about the people discussing the news. If it is, it ain't news anymore. It's reality TV with a newsy kind of tone, and that's it. Anyway, with that said, we're gonna move on to perhaps more optimistic news. Bernie, 2024, is it still possible? Should we whisper of a dream? Bernie Sanders, after running in 2016 and 2020, apparently has not ruled out another run for president, according to sort of leaked news from a top advisor. Now, all of this is apparently predicated on whether Biden runs or not. But let's jump into what was actually said. In the event, this is Faiz Shakir, close Sanders advisor, who was his campaign manager back in 2020, so you know, he would sort of know, says in the event of an open 2024 Democratic presidential primary, Senator Sanders has not ruled out another run for president, so we advise that you answer any questions about 2024 with that in mind. And a spokesman for Bernie Sanders responding to this story says, while it's frustrating this private memo leaked to the media, the central fact remains true, which is that if Senator Sanders is the most popular office holder in the country. And he was referring there to a recent poll. I did a lot of searching for polls, and there is a lot of polls that show that Bernie is the most popular national political figure. The most recent ones I saw were from a couple of years ago, though. So I've decided not to run with those. I want to see more updated information. But Kyla, this is kind of potentially big news, but I'm very curious what you think about this. We have no idea what 2024 is going to look like, obviously, with the biggest fact being whether Biden runs or not. But what do you think about the possibility that Bernie might give it a third try?
I know that Bernie's old, you know, he's dedicated his life to this, but I think it would be exciting if he ran again. I mean, clearly he's not done with it all. I don't think anyone could really ignite the left like Bernie can right now. His policy positions were something that young people especially could get behind, believe in, and fight for. When I was in college back in 2020, I organized for his Students for Bernie program. Two of my supervisors at UNPAC were former Bernie staffers who wanted to see his policies actualized, which is why we fought for democracy reform. So it would be super exciting. And I don't want to jinx anything because, you know, Bernie did have some health issues the last time he ran, but he's an exciting candidate. He really knows how to run a fiery and a good campaign, especially on good policy. So it would be exciting to see him run again.
Look, that is certainly my overall feeling. And of course, for some in the audience, they know that Anna Kasparian and I discussed this. It had just broken before the Young Turks yesterday. But I want to dive into some potentially difficult areas. So what about the potential competition? After all, like when Bernie Sanders ran in 2016, there were basically no other progressive political figures with a national like stature to match him. In 2020, a case could be made about some, but he was the biggest one. Look, Elizabeth Warren, you know, obviously tried to present herself as an alternative. Now, though, there are some new, significantly younger progressives. What do you think about the possibility of multiple progressives running? That it could be Bernie, but then also, I don't know, Rashida Tlaib or AOC or Nina Turner, Cory Bush, or you know, God knows who. Or what if there was a concern that we're like Bernie's decision to run could really influence whether those others have a chance, whether they would run, that if he runs, it might have a sort of similar effect as Trump on the right, that it would sort of crowd out the space. Do you think that's a fair concern? Is that something that Bernie should think about?
No, absolutely. Again, this is a united fight about progressing progressive ideals, ideology, policy, legislation. And so if Bernie is serious about that, I think that he should sit at the table with other progressives who have a strong chance at running and winning and talk about the, you know, the strategy of it all. I think that, again, Bernie, as much as I love him and his policies, you know, he's old, he's a white man. And I think our country, you know, we need to see something a little bit different, something newer, something that can really ignite more people to vote and turn out. And so I'm really interested in seeing what progressives stand up to the 2024 presidential elections, who wants to run and who has a real chance at uniting this country and winning.
Yeah. Well, look, we also know just about a week ago, it was announced that the Democratic primaries potentially could look very different in that the normal cycle of Iowa, New Hampshire get to be the first states. That might not be the case. I mean, it might in the end, but it's possible that other states could go first. And strategically, in terms of the primary, one thing that obviously hurt Bernie was the inability to break through, especially with Southern black voters. Now, I think a very good case could be made that his positions actually line up quite well with the positions held by those voters. And obviously people talk about like his history of, you know, involvement with the civil rights movement and all that. That being said, that's now been adjudicated in two different elections. And for whatever reason, and a lot of it I think is the media being incredibly unfair to Bernie, that sort of thing didn't break through in the past couple elections. And so I think it's a fair question to ask, what would be different in 2024 that would give him a better chance in some states? Like Super Tuesday obviously has a lot of Southern states that'll vote. Some of them might be voting first in this case, so they're gonna have an even larger impact on it. So what do you think about if he is to run, his ability to broaden his appeal to some populations that he had trouble with in the last two rounds?
I think that one of the great things that Bernie did last time was igniting young people, but he tends to be a class reductionist. And I think that he needs to have a bolder approach when it comes to addressing issues that Black Americans face, that other Americans of color face. And so if he is the only progressive candidate running in 2024, then he needs to have a bolder approach on those two fronts. And again, lean into those young people, lean into those people who don't vote. We need to stop capitulating to Republicans because they're never going to vote for Democrats. And so let's focus on the people who don't turn out and vote. Let's focus on the people who are most marginalized, who need the most help, and uplift and center those voices in his next campaign.
I agree. Now, I'm gonna put you on the spot, but also give you an out. Feel free to say that you need to think about it more. You get to choose. It's up to you which progressive runs in an open Democratic primary in 2024. Who do you choose? Is it Bernie or is it someone else? Maybe someone that doesn't have a national platform yet. You have to choose the champion for the progressives for 2024. Who do you choose?
Well, you really are putting me on the spot. And this is only my second show, so I don't know if I can answer that.
You don't have to.
But I would actually love to see someone else run instead of Bernie. Somebody who's younger, someone who's a person of color, Black woman, would be amazing. Is the country ready for that? I would hope so. But
Yeah, I imagine like, think about the blood pressure at Fox during a sustained Nina Turner presidential run. Right. They will lose it.
How they did Ketanji Brown. And so it's a battlefield out there, especially for a Black woman to get out there and put, you know, everything on the line. And so I would applaud any progressive who fits that description or is close to that description. I would applaud them and, you know, fight for them because we need that in our country.
Yeah. Look, I think that there are a lot of names that would be perfectly good champions for our side. I'm gonna switch it up because everybody out here thinks they know what I'm gonna say, but I'm going to shock them and say, if I had to choose, I'm not gonna shock you. It would be AOC at this point. There are other great candidates. Like I think Nina Turner would be an amazing candidate. There are a number of others that I think would be good. I know we were talking with Anna Kasparian yesterday, and she thinks Katie Porter would be great. What I would love is for there to be like five awesome progressives and have them dominate the debate stage and make the then maybe even potentially outnumbered establishment picks look even more unrepresentative. And so we'll see. At the end of the day, it's probably not gonna be up to us, me and you. But anyway, here's what I'd like to do because we're about to transition into our first break. If we have a mod on YouTube and Twitch or both, let's throw out a few names. Let's put Bernie up there. I'd like AOC to be there. What are some names? I think we can probably fit four names. Who are a couple of the names you'd like to see on that poll?
We gotta put Rashida Tlaib, and let's do Nina Turner. I love her so much.
Okay, let's do that. So let's get a poll up. Bernie Sanders, AOC, Rashida Tlaib, Nina Turner. Okay. Anna's gonna get mad that Katie Porter's not on there, but we'll do more in the future. Don't worry. I like that. Let's get that poll up. And with that, we are gonna go into our first break. When we come back, Disney under assault in Florida. We got the details for you after this. Okay, everybody, I am making sure that we don't miss out on these poll results. We're gonna discuss them during our next break. But first, we've got some news to talk about. Let's jump into this.
But I am announcing today that we are expanding the call of what they are going to be considering this week. And so, yes, they will be considering the congressional map, but they also will be considering termination of all special districts that were enacted in Florida prior to 1968. And that includes the Reedy Creek Improvement District.
Okay, so this is what politics has become, at least on the right, at least in Florida. Highly targeted, specific, sustained campaigns against corporations, not just for going against the right, for being presented as going against the right. Disney is not some woke corporation, no matter how much they choose to say that. It is not some radical leftist corporation. The right has decided we need a villain. People seem to be fired up against Disney, so I guess we're gonna run against that. And so they are trying to eliminate the special taxing district, sort of special area for Disney, and very highly specific. We're gonna get into how they might face some constitutional concerns over the way that they're doing this. But the Florida Senate passed a bill just yesterday that would dissolve the special taxing district that allows Walt Disney to effectively self-govern within its theme park area. It now requires a vote in the state house before it can go to the desk of Ron DeSantis. That sounds like multiple steps. It's all the same from top to bottom. They're gonna get it. Anyway, the Senate also passed 24-15 just yesterday, a measure that would remove Disney's exemption in a 2021 law about big tech censorship. Again, these are not just legislative strikebacks against corporations that are perceived as ideological foes. It is highly specific, targeting individual corporations, which I shouldn't have to remind you is not how the law is supposed to work. There's actually quite a bit of judicial precedent implying that you cannot do specific strikeback to harm an individual corporation by name. You're supposed to be a little bit more subtle about it, but this isn't about subtlety. This is very much about sending a message. Ron DeSantis doesn't actually hate Disney. They're not actually worried about the moves that Disney has made, temporarily pausing donations or anything. They need it as a symbolic enemy, and that is why they have elevated this. It has real world consequences, not just to Disney, by the way. As we're gonna get to, this could have consequences for any number of people living in Florida, including conservatives, a big hit to their paycheck, which we'll get to. But Kyla, we are now 2 months into this war on Disney. What do you think about it?
Again, like you said before, they're using it to, like, you know, drum up the base, rally them up, get them to turn out for the 2022 midterms. And at the end of the day, they're just biting their own, you know, they're biting their own hands. And so it's just frustrating to see, like, you know, Republicans time and time again get away with this, you know, BS about this war on LGBTQ people and the representation that companies have on it. It's just ridiculous, but it's also funny to me that the heads and the CEO of, like, Disney, they're like, oh, you know, we're gonna continue to get these campaign funds, and it wasn't until their employees spoke out about it they wanted to pause it, and now look what's happening because they're not doing exactly what they want. They're now, like, you know, messing up their business and their money, and so it reminds me of that one quote, like, first they came for, you know, and so now their money is getting come for.
Exactly. And I'm gonna do one of the things I do. This is a common little impromptu segment I do, pointlessly pointing out hypocrisy. Hey, the right, you hate cancel culture, right? You remember when, like, a couple of people on Twitter didn't like something the CEO of Goya Beans had said? And so the right suddenly was huge fans of Goya, and they're all posing with cans of Goya. You know why they were doing that? Because they had a principle, a core foundational principle that just because a corporation or its CEO says something you don't like, you don't boycott it. That apparently was not actually a core principle, because now, just because of their misinterpretation of Disney, as Kyla points out, Disney was super like reluctant to do anything in this. They're like, okay, fine, you guys have been protesting for months. I guess we'll temporarily stop proactively funding the people who are doing this. And now the strike back. And again, you can't, like, constitutionally, you cannot pass laws intended to only harm a specific individual or a specific corporation, or at least that's how it's functioned for hundreds of years. But this is how specific it is. The particular improvement district that they're getting rid of was implemented in 1967 to allow Disney World to do this stuff. So they said, it's not that we're getting rid of these independent districts. We're only getting rid of ones that were founded before 1968. No reasonable judge is going to be fooled by that. That's designed to hurt this one corporation. Now, you might think, well, why not just get rid of all of it? Because there's a lot of them, actually. There's 1,844, and the right loves a ton of these, including places like the Villages. That's actually where he made his announcement about the review of the status, was in a different special district. He's fine with that one, because I guess it was founded more recently or something. This is all just so see-through. And hopefully, while regular Floridians probably initially, their knee-jerk reaction is to applaud this. Like, yes, the right is finally striking back against those pedophile cartoon mice. In the end, they might not like this because it could have financial repercussions for them. The district that they just eliminated, or in the process of eliminating, generates roughly $105 million annually in general revenue. I mean, why not? This is a massive corporation that has like something like 77,000 employees there. So this is gonna hurt a lot of Floridians directly in terms of their employment. So if they get rid of that, $105 million it collects to operate services goes away. The process becomes a little bit complicated, but in the end, that money does eventually need to be funded. In theory, households in Orange and Oscalia counties could face higher property taxes to the tune of something like $2,200. And look, I know conservatives in Florida don't like Disney or whatever, but do they $2,200 not like Disney? They gonna pay that tab for their dumb, misdirected hatred against Disney, Kyla? I think that might break through to them.
I just can't believe that people think that Republicans are like the party of like financial responsibility. Like, not only the waste of like taxpaying money going into like the pockets of these elected officials who are wasting it on like, you know, measures like this that are just gonna get thrown out in court. But now, like, you know, people are going to have to be paying higher property taxes, their like rent and their utilities and like the loss of wages. It's like, oh my God, how much money are you going to waste and throw down the drain to make a point to win an election? Like, it's ridiculous to me. And it just shows like they are morally deprived and corrupt.
100%. Yeah. And look, we'll make the point yet again, as we always do. If you're a conservative, does this seem like the actions, this multi-month campaign about supposed pedophilia and grooming, does this seem like the actions of a government that has heard your cries about how much economic pain and anxiety you've been suffering from, and now they're delivering for you? Or does it seem like a distraction? Honestly, I would make the case, maybe we can get this trending. If the deep state existed, wouldn't they want you to be focused on how Disney are secretly pedophiles? Because as long as you're focused on that, you're not coming for them. You're not coming for the actual deep state. You're not a threat to their wallet, to their bank accounts, to the position that they hold. There's an argument that could be made that this is exactly what a deep state would be wanted. For everyone to be hyper focused on a random villain being propped up. Maybe it's a trans swimmer in Texas and now it's a teacher in Illinois. Now, oh look, Mickey Mouse. Because you're not coming for the deep state when you're coming for this stuff, unless you believe that Walt Disney, who's been dead for a long time, is secretly a member of the deep state. Anyway, maybe try to get that trending. If you have to talk to one of your right-wing relatives, get them to believe that this is actually a plot of the deep state. They're stupid people, it might work. We need to switch things up just a little bit. General topic, but let's get off of the Disney. Let's talk about some of the attacks against Jen Psaki having to do with her temporarily expressing empathy for the LGBTQ people who are being targeted during this campaign.
The left has a sick obsession with their children. Just today, think about the last 24 hours for the White House. They want to force face cloth coverings on two-year-olds on airplanes and force teach them about sexuality and gender ideology at kindergarten. I mean, when my daughter goes to school, I don't want her learning about those things, coming home and teaching, being taught things that I then have to explain to her. And of all the issues to cry and get upset about, Sean, there's a war in Ukraine. There is bloodshed in our streets, children literally dying on the streets from crime that is totally out of control and rampant. There is COVID, where more Americans have died on Joe Biden's watch than on President Trump's. There is a lot to cry about. Namely, if you want to cry about one issue in this country right now, I think the press secretary should cry about the 62 million children that do not exist, that have been aborted because of Roe v. Wade, a heinous, heinous decision in this country that has exterminated about one-fifth of the United States population. So if you want to cry, don't cry about forcing sexuality on kindergartners.
Okay, so there's a lot that we have to jump into there. First of all, I do want to give Kayleigh McEnany credit. She knows what her skill set is, and it is sort of fairly brainless, knee-jerk whataboutism there. It is the easiest trick ever. Oh, this thing that sounds bad? Well, what about the organ thieves? And what about the street gangs? And what about the rising like, you, yes, you can rattle off a lot of things. I got news for you. When Trump was president, there were bad things happening too. And if they're gonna cry about something, why not cry about this one thing that I've randomly decided to focus on? Okay, that's fine. That's how you can use your time. We're talking about a serious issue. By the way, she undercuts herself quite a bit there, talking about how more people have died from COVID under Biden than Trump. Well, first of all, Biden has now experienced far more months of COVID than Trump did. Also, you guys have been encouraging people from the very beginning that COVID isn't a serious thing and you don't have to worry about it. So you've hardly been on the right side of that. I understand pointing that out is pointless. They know and they don't care. But there, what she is responding to is the fact that Jen Psaki broke down in tears while talking about the anti-LGBTQ laws that have been passed, about the new wave of stigma against this community, about the bullying that will come about as a result of it. And Kayleigh McEnany there is not having any of it. I think that she kind of projected a little bit what her real fear is, because she slipped up briefly. Did you notice that? When she said, I don't want my kid learning something and then coming back and teaching, having been taught something to me. Sounds like you're worried about them knowing something that you don't and expressing thoughts that you don't like. And I get it. What you want is indoctrination that comports with your worldview. A lot of parents want that, but you're not doing a good job of hiding it. Anyway, Kyla, what do you think about all that?
It's just frustrating, because if they really cared about children, they would listen to what experts say about comprehensive sexual education, that it helps children and improves their communication and social skills. It prevents things like teen pregnancy and STD rates. And it can even help prevent sexual abuse by making them aware of the warning signals like stranger danger. Like, Republicans aren't actually interested in having these, discussions, because that isn't their goal. Their goal isn't to protect children. It's to win an election and be as bigoted and oppressive and racist and anti-LGBTQ, homophobic, transphobic along the way. And so, all of what was coming out of her mouth were contradictions. This is the same network that, Tucker Carlson was putting out pro-Putin sentiments. But then they're saying, the Ukrainian war, full of contradictions, full of hypocrisy. They don't really care. They want to win elections. They want to get power. They want to get their base's money.
Exactly. That's what it is. And they have largely all agreed on this strategy. I mean, what you just saw there was effectively a little bit of cover on just QAnon BS. That is all that they have now. There's a sick obsession with our kids. And by the way, we talked about QAnon for literally years, trying to remind people that that's still out there, that it's still scary, and everybody sort of moved on. I understand there was a lot happening during the Trump years, but it is now, it has lost a little bit of its identifying characteristics, and it has become the default political discourse on the right. Everything is the pedophiles are coming for your kids. And Democrats, I don't know, maybe come up with something. We had that Michigan State Senator who had a good speech earlier this week about it. Don't hear a lot from that. This is transparent. It is evidence free. There's every reason that in a rational world, this wouldn't work to motivate your base for a long time. In the complete absence of evidence of wide scale pedophilia and the fact that the right seems perfectly happy with sexual predators on their own side, including known pedophiles. All of that are reasons to believe that this wouldn't work as a strategy in a rational world, which we don't live in. In our world, it's probably gonna be highly effective in getting them politically invested. And so this is something that deserves a reaction, and we're just really not seeing that from the Democrats.
Yeah, it's completely unfortunate because, again, like the Republicans, their side is just so easy to demolish with facts and logic and actual common sense. And the Democrats have never had a strong offensive because that would mean they would have to actually change things. They would have to, like, you know, show that the system is, you know, messed up. They would have to stop capitulating to their corporate interests and actually give money back to the, in the hands of the people. They're not interested in doing it either. And so the Republicans, they completely are just morally, like, you know, corrupt, and they don't give a damn. But Democrats, some of them do, and so they're fine with small, like, little increments of change, but that's not what we are actually calling for, and that's not what gives a strong offensive to the Republicans' BS.
Yeah, exactly. No, and you're totally right. And look, at the same time that we're describing this as a generalized strategy, which it is, they've all landed on this. It's a national thing now. It's very easy to do, and you don't have to make any specific claims. That's why they're doing it. At the same time, there are individual people and groups that are being harmed when some random teacher's comments are completely misconstrued by libs of TikTok and they end up getting fired or harassed out of their job. That is a victim of this. When people's rights are being stripped away at the state level, that is many victims of this. So we do have to fight against it for strategic reasons, for pragmatic political reasons, but also because there are an ever-increasing number of victims of this sort of nonsense. And the Democrats just don't seem to be taking it seriously. Now, with that said, we are going to take our second break. In fact, we're going to dive into the results of our poll. We gave you four, actually on Twitch, five different possibilities for the progressive champion for 2024. We're going to break that down after this. Okay, everybody, we are cruising towards, someone says, stop being Bernie or bust, John. It's not, but it's like a, I tweeted about the Bernie thing and I got like 1100 comments. All I said was thoughts, and boy, people had them, including some people who are like, Bernie or bust gave us Trump, which again, I'm not diving back into that. It's ahistorical nonsense. It's simply not, it's not true. But anyway, on Friday, we've got some exciting, an exciting court situation that's coming on. In advance of that, I wanna give you a little bit of preview of some of what might come out, starting with this.
A single question. We know four things already. One is that she called for Nancy Pelosi and Joe Biden to be executed for treason. She told her followers that they couldn't allow a peaceful transfer of power. She worked with the planners of some of the events of January 6th. And then the day before the attack, she signaled to her followers a code word that meant to storm federal buildings and supposedly overthrow tyrants. So we're going to ask her about all that and more.
So that is lawyer Ron Fine, who is going to be involved in making the case against Marjorie Greene tomorrow, actually, in their attempt to ban her from running, to get her off of the ballot. Now, the code word he talked about there, all of this could be evidence that comes up. And as you'll see in videos we're gonna show you, she seems incredibly worried about what's gonna come out tomorrow. But I wanna give you an idea of what he's talking about. So Green had referenced a 1776 moment. And that was made 2 days after she took the oath to uphold and protect the Constitution. It had a specific meaning to her intended audience. This is the case being made. When taken in the context of her well-known history of advocating political violence, which Ron detailed on that video, the widespread use of 1776 by violent extremists as a code word for violence and for storming government buildings, and the widespread reports of planned violence on the Capitol. Specifically, her remarks had the intended effect of signaling to her supporters that she was calling not for peaceful protest, but for violent resistance to a peaceful transfer of power to the president-elect in defiance of the Constitution. She specifically says, as you'll see, that we cannot just allow a peaceful transfer, she said, to Joe Biden. So she was very clear about that. And now she's apparently worried. We're gonna get into that first, a little bit more about what might happen tomorrow.
And this is an important time in our history. We can't allow this just to be gone, you know, just to let it go. You can't allow it to just transfer power peacefully like Joe Biden wants and allow him to become our president, because he did not win this election. It's being stolen and the evidence is there.
We aren't going to let this election be stolen by Joe Biden and the Democrats. President Trump won by a landslide.
Okay, so those are videos that might be played during this. And I have to admit, Kyla, so we had talked about this, you know, this attempt to block her from running before on the show. And I said that it did not strike me as quite right. It seemed to be going too far based on what I remembered of her involvement on January 6th. I mean, there's a lot of concerns about what we might not know about. But based on what we knew, I thought, I don't know that you can make the case that she was involved in it. But saying very specifically, we can't let there be a peaceful transfer of power. How do you read that as anything other than a call for violence in the, like, basically the hours leading up to January 6th? I don't know. What do you think about this?
No, I think that exactly what you just said. She incited violence. She incited an insurrection. She was anti-democratic and allowed and encouraged people to be anti-democratic. And I hope that she doubles down and stands 10 toes deep in what she said and also incited. It's too late to backtrack. It's too late to take it back. They like to pick up a megaphone and just start screaming with the hope that they can make a few campaign dollars. Well, here are the consequences now and face up to it. The music, you're not getting back on that ballot.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't know how it's going to end up going. I do think it is somewhat unprecedented in modern history. So my money wouldn't be on it, this effort being successful necessarily. But that evidence is going to be fairly robust. I had not remembered that video in particular, although now I do remember that we talked about it way back in the day, and that's going to be pretty devastating. And look, you just have to listen to me that that's a reason to be worried. She seems a little bit worried. So take a look at this.
I am the first Republican member of Congress that is going to be forced to take the witness stand under oath and defend myself against a lie and something I never did. And so this is a precedence. It's a very dangerous precedence. I cannot believe that I'm being forced to do this. I can't believe this judge has not thrown this case out and seen it for what it is. It's nothing but a big funded scam for the Democrats trying to control our elections.
I love her trying to use the word precedent and precedence and having no idea how to deploy it. Whatever, she's doing what she can. So there, she does not want to have to testify, which I get. I wouldn't want to have to testify. She's a little bit worried about it. On her pre-show yesterday, she was talking about how it is unacceptable that people will be live streaming this, that they'll be seeing in real time what's being presented, what videos are played, what evidence is presented. It just, for a couple of days, she has been really projecting, Kyla, that she is worried about how this might go. Which I, like, considering how difficult of a case it is to make, how unprecedented blocking someone is, why is she so worried? Maybe she knows some stuff that we haven't seen yet.
Absolutely. I think she knows exactly what she did. I think she knows exactly what part she played in it. And it might be that I'm idealistic. You know, I really care about democracy work. You know that I hunger strike for democracy. And so it's just really frustrating to, you know, see her potentially get away with these charges. Again, she helped incite and encourage an insurrection on our nation's capital. And so it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. We know that Justice Thomas's wife was also involved in some parts in this insurrection. Mm-hmm. And so, and he's like, you know, a Supreme Court justice, and he didn't have to recruit himself. And I don't know if he's going to see any consequences. And that's in the highest court of the land. And so we'll see what the course, you know, holds on Friday. Hopefully there will be some, you know, signs of accountability, but I will remain hopeful.
Yeah, we'll see. And again, I'm glad that you reminded us of that story. Like, sure felt like there should have been some kind of consequences for Ginni Thomas, and no, we're moving on, no issue. By the way, we were talking in a production meeting this morning, Mike Lee, who sent all those text messages like saying like, give us ammunition, how are we gonna overthrow the government? Give us something, we got nothing. Nothing's come of that. Like, there's just so much that we present it to the world. We're like, this is unacceptable, right? Everyone, no, we can accept it. Okay, we'll see what happens tomorrow. I was watching an old episode of SNL, and it was the episode that came out the week of the grab 'em by the pussy comment. And it just, like, I had sort of forgotten about that. And it reminded me, like, how did that not end this? That is madness. But that was 1500 madnesses ago.
I'm starting to think that our government is like a never ending SNL skit. It's exactly. Ridiculous. It's just that goes on. It's just,
So it's just insane what we have to deal with. Anyway, we're going to see really fast. I did want to respond. I saw a comment that was like, if you're telling the truth, then why are you worried to testify? Look, I understand, like, philosophically, I sort of get that. It's still inconvenient. And by the way, there are sham lawsuits that would be super, like, time consuming and all that. So no, like, you could have an issue with something even if you're telling the truth. In this case, though, you are right. I mean, based on the evidence we're seeing, you can't say that a case hasn't been made. Even if I hadn't remembered some of the evidence originally. Anyway, we're gonna see what happens tomorrow. We'll be giving you our reactions. With that said, we've got time for just one more story. So let's end with a bit of fun, I guess, with this.
Before I met you,
I'm done.
I'll break a thousand more, baby, before I am through. I want to be yours, pretty baby, yours and yours alone. I'm here to tell you, honey, that I'm bad to the bone.
Ugh. Anyway, that's Rudy Giuliani, who we had reason to believe from a story that broke earlier this year was probably gonna be on The Masked Singer. No, he was. He was unmasked after nobody guessed him, because why would you be thinking about Rudy Giuliani randomly? So he came out, sang Bad to the Bone, and the hero of this story is right there. Ken Jeong decided, nope, I'm done, I'm not interested in this. And he walked off the set. I wish I had been there. I mean, I don't wanna be anywhere near Rudy Giuliani, but if I was, just so that I could walk off stage like him. He is my king, he is my hero. Kyla, what do you think about this?
Yeah, this guy needs to be in jail rather than in a mask. Like, he's totally down bad. And I can't tell if this is an attempt to, like, you know, save his public image or further embarrass himself into like irrelevancy, but like, it's just, why is he here? Why is he on stage? Honestly, I wish I had some tomatoes to bring with me, because I would have been throwing them at him. And yeah, it's just, the fact that some of the other hosts were like dancing along, this man is a criminal. This man has oppressed and just been a tyrant in any position that he's held. He doesn't deserve to be on any stage. He doesn't deserve any type of applause. He doesn't deserve any attention. Yeah, let this man go back to wherever hole he crawled out from, and let him, you know, continue to sit there and drink his way somewhere else. But like, yeah, no, this guy needs to just go somewhere.
I would love that. Yeah. No. He, look. This is The Masked Singer. Full disclosure, I don't watch The Masked Singer. I cannot believe. No, I can believe. I don't like that it's the cultural juggernaut that it is. I sort of get it. It seems very easy to watch. It has, you know, mass appeal in that it doesn't require anything of you. But this is what they do. They take people like this to generate news. I get it, and they know that we'll respond to it, but I sort of feel obligated, because as you point out, Rudy Giuliani is a legitimately bad guy. A case can be made that he should be in prison. And even if not that, even if you forget about the fact that he worked overtime, apparently for free, to try to end American democracy like a year and a half ago, and we're just supposed to forget that, and was participating in an international effort to blackmail Zelensky into doing this sham investigation of Joe Biden. Okay, I mean, he ran for president prior to that pretty much exclusively on Islamophobia. He was one of the most racist mayors in history. Like, there are a lot of reasons to not normalize this guy, to not whitewash him. And I get, maybe I'm not as good of a host as some of the hosts on that show, but did you have to dance? Okay, Jenny McCarthy is gonna dance, I guess. For a long time, she was an anti-vaxxer. For all I know, she loves Rudy Giuliani. I have no idea. We're not friends. We don't talk about this stuff. But isn't that Nicole Scherzinger? Is that how you say her name? Why is she dancing to that? First of all, it wasn't good. So it's not like, just as a lover of like jams, she had to dance. But you know who Rudy Giuliani is. Why are you participating in this? It would have been great to see all of them walk off stage.
Oh my God, if only people had that amount of courage. I mean, again, like, they're still gonna collect their paychecks, and I'm sure it would have brought more views if they all walked off the stage. But it just shows that, you know, like, once the lights and cameras gone on, people become very complicit, especially with, you know, people who used to be in power, who have, you know, some publicity behind their name. And so, yeah, it's definitely disappointing that not everybody walked off, but I'm really glad that John did. And I, you know, applaud him for his, not only his courage, but like his sped upness. He's like, I'm done, and just walked off. That was brilliant.
That was brilliant. Okay, really fast. So this is where it gets a little bit more difficult. How do you grade his singing? Because it wasn't good, but it wasn't as bad as I might have expected, I guess. I give him like a C. What do you think, really fast?
Oh no, complete F.
Okay.
And an R for racist.
Jeez, you gave him an R. Okay, well, that's fair. Okay, we disagree. Feel free to let us know what you think if you're watching this. Anyway, with all that said, thank you everyone for watching. If you're on the pod, thank you as always. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, by the way. If you're on Twitch, YouTube, or our linear platforms, we got more. Don't go anywhere. California and I are going to give you more news, as well as Meanwhile In. in just a few. We'll see you after that. We now have a new shirt for Earth Day, new Dragon Squad design available at Shop TYT. You can in fact get 20% off the entire site with code GOGREEN22.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.